Hello everybody, welcome to Australian PI Podcast, Episode 5. I'm Natalie and I'm coming to you from the headquarters of Colloque Investigations. Thanks for tuning in once again. We've got a really interesting show ahead of us today. I've decided that you're probably sick of just hearing my voice on these podcasts, so I've decided to start interviewing a range of interesting and informative individuals, starting with our insurance broker. Now, I know probably the term insurance might send you instantly asleep, but for anybody running a small business, it's an essential part of running that business. And we have an amazing insurance broker who is a guru when it comes to risk management and how to minimize risk within your business and how to insure against the risk that you can't prevent. So he is a really amazing person to have contact with, and he really does know everything there is to know, I think, about risk management when it comes to PIs. So I'm going to be talking to him a little bit later on in the show. So stay tuned to that. Okay, well, this is the section of the show where we talk about handy little apps, iPhone and Android apps that are useful for PIs. And I have a really cool one this week, but I have to, before I introduce it, I have to make the disclaimer that I haven't tested it extensively yet, so I do apologize if I'm speaking out of turn here, but I do think that this is probably a very handy app, and I've been checking out the reviews online and it seems to be getting some really good reviews. I think it's going to be really handy for PIs. The app is called Hushed, and it's a temporary phone number app that works off your Android or your smartphone, and it allows you to have temporary phone numbers for a small fee of around $6.99 in Australia for a 30-day use of a phone number. You can choose from a list of landline numbers, and you can use that number to make calls from your phone, from your existing phone, and also to receive calls. So handy for when you're on those jobs where you need to perhaps give a number out to a subject or to somebody that you don't really want to have your real number, and you can use that number to make calls and receive calls. You can also phone internationally on it, which is pretty handy little app sometimes, little feature sometimes, I think. And the number's completely untraceable, so it means that anybody who tries to look you up won't be able to trace you, and it won't be able to trace the number back to your phone. So it's pretty good. As far as I know, SMS isn't available yet in Australia. I think it's only available in the States, but I could be wrong there. The actual calls themselves, when you're making calls from the number, it's not using up your data or your minutes on your phone. So you only pay for what you initially pay to rent that number. So there aren't any other additional charges, and from what I can tell, there aren't any time limits either. So you can speak for as long as you like for the one price that you pay. So yeah, check it out, guys. I'd be interested to hear your feedback from anyone who is already using it or has used it. I haven't had cause to use it yet, but I've got it on my phone, and I'm keen to try it out at the first opportunity. So yeah, let us know. Send us an email or post a comment on our page, and let us know, you know, what you think of the app if you've tried it out. So that's our app of the day. With Richard White from White Insurance Brokers. Richard is very familiar with insurance and risk management requirements of PIs because he's worked with PIs for a long time and has many of us on his books, including Colloque Investigations. Whenever I speak to Richard, he's always such a wealth of information that I knew I had to ask him to come on our podcast to share some of his wisdom with the rest of you. Richard, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Richard, I guess we'll just launch straight into this. What are the primary liability risks for PIs, particularly those working on their own as sole traders?
The primary risks for private investigators are a breach of professional duty, such as failing to act in a professional manner, losing documents, committing libel or slander, or having fraud or dishonesty committed by their employees. In addition, everyone, you, me, bloke down the road, all has a general duty of care to ensure that we don't injure people or damage people's property. The other factor that PIs may come across is unintentional breaches of statutory or criminal legislation, because they're either totally ignorant of them or they weren't aware that they existed, and then they do something and then as a result of doing that, someone takes umbrage with them. And then there's always the other one, which is the commercial reality, which many businesses, businessmen find themselves in. They have a very important client. That important client wants them to do something. In order to achieve what they want you to achieve, it may involve bending or breaking the law. And your client puts the pressure on you to bend or break the law. And if you don't, they threaten to, you know, cancel the contract. So it puts the businessman in a very awkward position. But the general rule is, or the golden rule is, never ever break the law. And if you're in any doubt, ring up and speak to someone, because we do see those subtle pressures being brought to bear, in particular on people in the industry of private investigation.
We were also talking yesterday, Richard, about that sticky issue when it comes to subcontractors who are working for a contractor who has them on their insurance. You mentioned something really interesting to me yesterday that I don't think a lot of subcontractors are aware of, but the fact that when they're covered only while they're working for that particular contractor, once they are taken off that contractor's insurance, they're held completely liable, and that's why it's important for them to have their own insurance. Is that what you were saying to me yesterday? Did I understand that correctly?
Basically, the with professional indemnity cover, it's a financial lines product, and most financial lines products are written on a claims made basis, not a claims occurred. Your typical public liability type policy is, you trip me down the stairs today, you break my leg today, whether I sue you today, tomorrow, or in 100 years time, the insurance policy that insured you today is the one that will pay that claim, no matter when I make the claim on you. With professional indemnity being a claims made policy and not a claims occurred, although I might make a financial error or breach of a financial error today and cause you to sustain a loss, if you don't make that claim on me until 4 years' time, it's my professional indemnity insurer in 4 years' time that has to pay the claim, not the one that was in force when I caused the incident to occur. So the problem for people with professional indemnity is, if you allow your professional indemnity to lapse or stop, and then the claim is made on you, you'll have no policy in force, and therefore you have no cover. So those people who, as we commonly call it, piggyback off someone else's insurance, you're only covered under the PI for as long as you remain on their policy. And if they decide to take you off that policy, for whatever reason, they don't want to use you anymore, or they shut down their business and don't trade anymore, all the cover for you for anything you've done in the past stops at that point. So that's why it's important, in my opinion, that people should hold their own professional indemnity, and then they can keep their policies ongoing for as long as they require.
Is professional indemnity an expensive insurance for particularly someone who's a sole trader who may just be starting out in the industry? Is it something that can be affordable?
It is. Today, professional indemnity has become very cheap. I mean, 10 years ago, minimum professional indemnity premiums, you know, could start at $5,000 upwards. But now, the market's become saturated and the premiums have plummeted significantly. So, you can get covers, professional indemnity cover, quite cheaply, well under $1,000 now.
Well, that's certainly good news for PIs who are just starting out, because, I mean, there are lots of other expenses that they're having to incur to buy all of their equipment, etc. So, you know, and insurance can be, you know, one of those things that people say, oh, I don't need it, you know, I'll be right, she'll be right, you know, that whole sort of Australian attitude of she'll be right comes into it sometimes when it does get a little bit too financially onerous. Do you find that with PIs that you speak to?
I would find it generally with most people. There is an undercurrent attitude in Australia of this, that nothing will go wrong, or if it does, it won't affect me. And sadly, too many people are finding out the hard way that things do go wrong, and they go wrong quite often. And it's a mindset that needs to be changed, because Australia has caught up with the rest of the world, from my experience anyway. I mean, sort of 20-odd years ago, there wasn't all this bureaucratic red tape that you see today. Europe and America and places like that had more red tape than you can imagine. But for some weird reason, the Australian governments have decided that they want to go down the same path, and we're getting many, many new laws coming in that are designed to sort of say, well, we passed a law to protect the public on this and that, but whether it does or does not is an open debate. But the point is that as anyone in business today, you cannot really avoid your obligations, and insurance has now become a very important integral part of that ongoing compliance.
We've talked a lot about the sort of security measures that we should be having here at Cloak to protect ourselves, particularly as we're handling lots of sensitive information. What sort of recommendations do you have for PIs when it comes to risk management in terms of protecting the sorts of sensitive or personal information that they're collecting?
Well, privacy is a big issue right across the country, both from, you know, getting those annoying phone calls when you're about to sit down for your evening meal, right through to, you know, people hacking into your private data and trying to steal your bank account details to get all your money. Businessmen, and particular private investigators who are dealing in gathering facts and information, often those facts and information can be private or confidential or quite damaging if they were to be let loose into the public arena. So it's imperative that whenever you conduct your investigations, collate the information, that you keep that information private, that you keep all the documents safe and secure. And if you keep things kept on computer, you make sure that, you know, the computer systems are locked down to prevent hacking or unauthorized access, both from external parties, but also internal parties. If you're a big company with, you know, a number of staff, one of the biggest breaches that occurs is through disgruntled staff who decide to use their passwords to get into data and then take the data or publish it. Like with WikiLeaks, that was a breach where the American soldier had his full access, and he decided that he wanted to sell it to the WikiLeaks and have it all plastered all over the internet. So the government's sort of clamping down on this quite heavily. Breaches of privacy can attract heavy fines and serious punishments. So it's imperative that, you know, that any private investigator, especially if they're new to the game, realizes that this is something that's extremely important, and they can't take a flippant attitude towards this, and to ensure that they respect and keep everything confidential.
You were also saying that there are insurance products out there where that, you know, can help people guard against that possibility that perhaps their firewall is breached or their information is stolen in some way. What sorts of products are available out there for that you would recommend for PIs, you know, who maybe want a little bit of cyber insurance?
Well, professional indemnity covers loss of documents. So if you lose documents, then as a result of you losing those documents, someone has to incur additional expense to replace those documents, you can be sued for that. And so professional indemnity is a good one to have. The big one at the moment is cyber insurance. It's a relatively newish insurance on the market, and it's come about because of the hacking of computers that is now widespread around the world. Basically, the professional hackers, predominantly from Russia, what they do is they find a unguarded computer, they hack into it, and then they hold you to ransom and say, if you don't send us, you know, $5,000 or $1,000, whatever the amount might be, we will deny you access to your computer, or they will take the data that's on there and then use it. Now, in the case of just small businessmen, they basically hold them to ransom for, you know, for about $5,000. It's not a huge amount. It's enough for you to go, I'll pay it to get rid of the problem, but not so much that you're going to, you know, say, well, I'm going to go to the police and you know, take them on. So they're clever enough to put them into, put you into a situation where you think, well, I might as well pay it, and that's the end of it. But if you're a much bigger company, or you're a company that deals in sensitive information, what they're really after is not the money, but the data. And with that data, they can then use that data for other means, whatever that may be. And if you have personal data on people, especially if they're sort of you know, rich and famous, then that data is you know, a goldmine for these people, and they use that data to then either blackmail or put problems onto these people. So, but if that happens in Australia, the laws at the moment, I believe, if you're a company, you'll get fined about $1.7 million for breaches of data, and something like 350,000 if you're an individual. What cyber insurance does, it doesn't actually stop that from happening, but what it does is protects you for unintentional breaches of your data, and the cyber insurance can either help pay the ransom to free your computer up, or they'll cover you in some circumstances in respect to the fines that may ensue from it, and certainly they'll help defend you in court if you're dragged into court for any reason. In turn, the best way to lock down data is to, or to stop you from being hacked, is to limit or restrict the access that people have to your computers, and that means locking down a computer, having good backups so that if you do get hacked, you can close down the computer and then reload your data. Monitor, you know, keep the latest software viruses and things like that in place, and also to ensure that your staff are fully aware not to click on emails that look quite innocent, because what the professional hackers do is they send you a very innocent email, which could be anything, you know, and you click on it and nothing happens. But what it does, it sort of leaves a little Trojan sitting in there, and then they send you another email, and there'll be something else in there, and it's a bit like building up a jigsaw puzzle in a way. It slowly puts pieces together, and eventually you end up allowing this device to be completely put on your computer, and then they've got control of it. So vigilance is the main thing, and being sensible, especially if you're into this, you know, if you're a real tech head and you like to get the latest gadgets, it's the latest gadgets that have the highest risk of security. So just beware of that, and my recommendation there is go and get some really good advice from a really good tech-savvy person who can help you in that area.
Yeah, and actually probably, like you were suggesting to me the other day, get somebody who is very tech savvy to maybe try and crash test your system to see if they can hack into it, so that you know where your weak points are.
Yeah, well, as a rule, most businesses should hold a business continuity plan, whether that be because there's going to be a major fire or flood or anything where your business stops trading. What has been proven that if businesses that don't have business continuity plans, and therefore, say, business interruption insurance, they basically go, even though they might rebuild the building and get back up running again, generally most of them go out of business within 3 years of a major catastrophe. So having a business continuity plan means that you've sat down and thought about what happens if this happens or that happens, and you put in plans so that you can activate those plans if the worst happens. Now, the advantage that PIs have is that they're effectively out and about most of the time. they go off to interview people and collect data and stuff. So they're not like a factory that has a big machine that's in the factory, and if the factory burns down, that's it, you can't work. PIs, even if they lost their home or their business offices, they could still go out and do their job as long as they can go and rent somewhere else. But the main thing is to back up all your data and to keep all important records off-site or in a separate area. So if you have an office, take your backup data to home. Or if you work from home, perhaps have the backup backed up to, say, one of your relatives or something who you trust, where they may have another computer and you can put it there. So if the worst happens, you can then just go to your relative's house and then start up again. But business continuity is something that every businessman should have a plan for, and it doesn't have to be war and peace. It can be just a one-page document saying, well, look, if the place burns down, I'll do this, I'll do that, or if I get a flood, I'll do this, I'll do that, or if the utilities go down. So they're not difficult. You just have to sit down and think about them. But if you do, then if you are confronted with the worst-case scenario, then at least you've got an idea of how you're going to do it.
Yeah, and I would imagine having things up in a cloud, as so many things are these days, such as your accounting programs and those sorts of things, and using programs like Dropbox and those sorts of things, might be useful business continuity measures as well, because I would imagine that those sorts of measures would ensure that you do have access to your data, even if your premises is, or your computer dies or gets hacked and, you know, there's a virus on it or whatever.
Well, the only thing my view on the iCloud and all this, I'm a little bit, I suppose because of my age and being older, I'm a little bit hesitant on this modern technology. The iCloud sounds great, and I'm not rubbishing it or anything, but you have no control over it. So if something, wherever these are backed up to, if something happened to where this data is backed up to, you've got no control over it. If you have your own server or computer in-house and the data is backed up to a second drive and something goes wrong, you've got the data there in front of you or easily available. But the iCloud, I'm not too sure about that at this stage. I know a lot of people do it, and it enables people to cease having to have expensive computer systems in, but I still think sometimes the old-fashioned way is not so bad, because if you do have a server and you back everything up and then you have a secondary backup system somewhere, you can easily access that. Whereas if you're backing up to, say, somewhere in a different state or overseas, how are you going to get that data? Just food for thought. I mean, I'm no expert on that area, but that's why you need to talk to your IT people to work out what's best for you. The important thing is that depending on what kind of business you are, in this case, obviously we're talking about PIs, but everyone has different obligations placed upon them. I, as a broker, have huge obligations placed on me, and I have to have all sorts of security and protection and backup and so forth in case that situation occurs. And with PIs, if you're dealing with very sensitive data, which some of them do, some of them deal with very sensitive government data, they would probably be bound by some contract, and in that contract it would probably specify what they need to do. And if they don't do what they need to do, what that contract specifies, then they could be in all sorts of trouble if the worst happened.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, in some cases, in order to remain compliant, they have to have a lot of these measures in place, and certainly probably certain levels of insurance cover as well. Well, Richard, thank you so much. You've been absolutely fascinating to talk to, as always. And if anybody would like to, talk to Richard a bit more, if you've got any questions, you can either contact us at Cloak Investigations, or you can contact Richard directly. You can go to his website at www.whiteinsure.com.au, or you can give him a call on 0387905701. Well, thanks for talking to us again, Richard, and we might get you back on here again in a few weeks' time to talk about some more risk management and insurance strategies.
Yes, certainly. It's been great. Thank you, Ashley.
That was Richard White. Well, I hope you guys found that useful. Next time, I'll be speaking to a guy who is fast making a name for himself as a lie detection guru. His name is Jeremy Kesby, and he's going to be heading up our Deception Detection Masterclass in November. He'll be here talking about learning the art of deceptionese, as he calls it, which is, in other words, is, you know, basically how to spot a liar. So certainly a very handy skill for factual investigators. So tune into our next podcast for more about lie detection. And if you're interested in our Deception Detection Masterclass, you can go to our website and reserve your seat. There's only limited spots available, so if you get in quick, you'll get a spot. You can always email us as well if you would like to just give us an expression of interest. If we can't get you into this masterclass, we'll be running others. So, stay in touch with us. And if you've got any feedback on today's podcast, if you've got any tips or any information that you'd like to share, you can always get in touch with us by emailing us at admin@cloakinvestigations.com.au. You can go to our website, cloakinvestigations.com.au, and by all means, visit us on Facebook. You can like us on Facebook there, or send us a message on Twitter. We're available. We want to hear from you, and we love the fact that you're tuning into our podcast and learning the vital skills that you need to be a private investigator. Well, we'll see you next time.